One theme that constantly stuck out to me was co-option. These guys are co-opting constantly. Yeah. You know, we got Pepe the Frog, the OK symbol, which, you know, half of these are kind of start as trolls, but then, you know, sort of morph into something a little more ambiguous. You know, taking vaporwave music and art and turning it into this sort of fash wave aesthetic and making music accordingly. Even the far right comics that one guy wrote actually had sort of, it was basically like a far right Avengers, you know, it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of original ideas there. So why is there so much co-option as opposed to sort of original art and culture in these communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two reasons. One, it's a very deliberate strategy to kind of sneak far-right ideology into mainstream spaces. And so this was all, I think, kind of a reaction to social media companies deciding to take stake stuff down back in 2015. I'm that old. This was a, you know, explicit far-right content would get taken down. So they quite actively, and we watched it happen in real time, figured out ways around it. It's right. One of the ways was to hijack mainstream symbols, right? So they couldn't, at the very least, they could claim irony. At the very least, they could just say, this makes sense for our in-group. And so we could put Pepe the Frog out there. The vast majority of the people wouldn't know what you're talking about, but it became a kind of inside joke for them, right? And so that's one of the reasons. And I think the other co-optation part of it is social performance, right? It transforms symbols, transforms fascism from kind of an ideology to a look, right? To like a lifestyle brand almost. And so it becomes something you can use to kind of push double meanings and kind of troll the media as a result of that, right? And so that becomes part of what they're doing also. It's a quite a deliberate strategy, I think.
Amy, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, it's an effective strategy. It's one that makes countering very difficult because, you know, if you're reporting a Pepe the Frog meme, like, if the folks on the other side of that report don't understand what this is actually indexing, what it's pointing to, then our ability to, you know, have things taken down or to push back against them is often met with resistance from folks in the mainstream. Like, why am I so concerned about these things that just look kind of silly and don't feel like a big deal, right? So it poses a real challenge for those of us who work in preventing and countering violent extremism.
Yeah, you know, on that, Amy, you guys kind of already touched on the next thing I was hoping to dig into on this sort of co-option and all of these things with double meanings. But I do wonder sometimes about the role of the media in this and, you know, where we kind of as journalists can screw up, you know, the deniability that is ascribed to the dual meanings of these co-opted things. You know, when something has two different possibilities, it's very easy to gaslight someone or to, you know, make fun of them or make them look stupid. And so, you know, you get headlines like that there was this OK symbol that is now a neo-Nazi or far right or whatever symbol. And it's kind of hard for that to be taken seriously. And it turns into this big mockery of the media, simultaneously discrediting media and kind of giving some clout to these far right guys. Is that, I mean, you kind of already said that's part of the point, but how can the media be aware of what the line is there?
I mean, I think the stuff written on the bullets of the Charlie Kirk shooter is a good example here, right? Like we're dealing with a bunch of guys who are just very deep in the online space, and they function according to the laws. Laws is probably the wrong word, but according to the norms of this online space, and they try to abide by it, right? And it makes little sense to the rest of us outside of that space. And as much as you try to keep on top of it, and we do this, me and Amy do this full time, and I'm still behind all the time, right? And so it moves very quickly and very fast.
There's an excerpt from a new episode of Bubble Pop. Find the show archives wherever you get your podcasts at rachelgilmore.substack.com and at harbingermedianetwork.com. You listen to Harbinger showcasing your local campus and community radio station. This episode is brought to you by the Canadian progressive journalism community, unrig.ca. Coming up next. Broadcasting since 2020, Tech Won't Save Us is an internationalist left-wing tech podcast featuring Paris Marx in St. John's, Newfoundland. On this highlight from the show's recent landmark 300th episode, Paris takes a break from a writer's retreat in New Zealand to share his reasons to push for digital sovereignty from American tech. Now, here's the show.
Hello and welcome to Tech Won't Save Us, made in partnership with The Nation magazine. I'm your host, Paris Marx, and this week my guest is... well, I don't have a guest. I'm just doing this myself this week. And for good reason. Tech Won't Save Us is at episode 300, which is honestly hard to believe. You know, it's hard to believe that I have been doing this show for 5.5 years, that I started in the middle of a global pandemic, or I guess not even in the middle of it, but quite early on in it. And to think that after all of that time, I have now interviewed hundreds of people, made some series on special shows, got to learn so much about so many different aspects of the tech industry, and hopefully shared a lot of people's perspectives and ways of thinking about these issues with you as well. And that, you know, hopefully you learned some things from that over however many episodes of the show you have listened to. I'm sure I say it every single time I hit one of these milestones, but it's always hard to believe that I have been doing the show for this long, for this many episodes, and admittedly, I don't really have plans to stop doing so anytime soon. And so I figured with that milestone, I have a right to commandeer this episode for myself. If you're a regular listener of the show, you will know that I don't do this very often. I don't usually have an episode without a guest where I just kind of talk about an issue that I think is important. It's probably only happened a few times in the history of Tech Won't Save Us itself, maybe like once in every 100 episodes, we might say. And so I figured if I'm going to do an episode like this, why not do it on episode 300? And, you know, before we get into that, I think maybe it's worth talking a little bit about what the show has looked like this year. You know, obviously we have continued to have fantastic interviews with experts on all manners of what is going on with the tech industry these days. But I think you will probably have also noticed that there has been a greater focus on the geopolitics of technology. Over in the past, I would probably have described the show, you know, if we're thinking kind of like big picture and not trying to worry about like the accessibility of the language I'm using or something, the show was probably broadly about the political economy of technology and the politics of technology more generally, right? This is not necessarily a technical show where we're interested in the technical workings of the technology. We're interested in how the technology interacts with society, the effects that that has, the way that technology is a means for power to exert itself, and also how that technology can obscure the way that power is used within society. And so I feel like this year, things have changed a little bit with a focus on geopolitics, but it's really just been kind of broadening the scope of what I'm interested in with the show and, you know, not focusing as exclusively or as narrowly on the United States and what's going on in the US tech industry, though, of course, there has still been plenty of that on the show because, you know, it's impossible to ignore it. But hopefully you will have also seen that there's a bit more focus on some other different parts of the world, what is going on in those different parts of the world, and also, you know, how we got to this moment geopolitically, thinking about the way that the United States and the way that Silicon Valley uses its power to understand now why it's so difficult for so many other countries to deal with an administration like the one that Donald Trump leads and a newly empowered class of tech billionaires who are benefiting from the way that Donald Trump uses his power and uses the US government in particular, not just to serve himself, but to serve the interests of key groups around him. And I would argue that the tech industry has really kind of closely aligned itself with Trump for part of that reason. And so that's why I think, you know, it's worthwhile to dig into aspects of that a bit more and what we might try to do in order to try to get off of US technology, but also try to weaken the hold that US technology has, not just on us individually, but on us collectively. You know, when we think about our governments, when we think about the societies that we live in and what it might look like to try to take a different path, to go in a different direction, which is, I think, something that especially for those of us outside the United States, is really something that's important to think about and to try to grapple with right now in this moment, seeing what's happening with the United States and seeing how the Trump administration is wielding its power. And so before we get further into this, I would probably just say that given that we are at episode 300, if you have been enjoying the show so far, you know, if you do feel like you learn a lot from the show, your support is always appreciated, and that can take many different forms. Obviously, you can go to wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a 5-star review so people can see that you like the show. You can, of course, share the show, including this episode, on social media or with any friends or colleagues who you think would learn from it, who you think would gain some insights from listening, not just to this episode, but maybe some other episodes of the show as well. And of course, Tech Won't Save Us is possible because of the support of listeners like you. And so if you do enjoy this episode, if you do enjoy the work that I put into making this every single week to spread these critical perspectives on the tech industry, you can become a supporter, which allows you to get ad-free episodes of the show, which allows you to get stickers if you support at a certain level. And of course, just allows us to keep making the show every single week. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/techwontsaveus. And sign up there to show your support. So with that said, let's continue on this topic, because I think it is an important one that we need to dig into in a little bit more depth, especially given what we have seen over the past year. And I think one of the things that the Trump administration has done really effectively, for those of us who pay attention to the way that the United States wields its power, and in particular, the way that the tech industry within the United States is able to kind of piggyback on that for its own benefit, is really just to show us how U.S. power works, right? And to kind of peel back the layers and any deceptions that might have been there, and the way that the United States basically bullies other countries in order to benefit itself. You know, and often that is couched in a whole range of different kind of language to make it seem acceptable, to make it seem like something that we should all be open to or welcoming to. But actually, you know, is often very beneficial to the United States at the end of the day. And so, you know, when Donald Trump and people in his administration and even these tech billionaires now go around threatening tariffs if countries don't do the things that the United States wants them to do, for example, if they try to pass digital services taxes or bring in new regulations on technology that are going to affect U.S. tech companies, and then the administration comes out with threats of retaliation, with threats of tariffs, it becomes very clear that the United States sees its interests being served by allowing its tech companies to spread and to not be effectively regulated. And now it's going to come out very directly and try to push back against that. And we pay a lot of attention to it when Donald Trump does it because of the way that we perceive the Trump administration and the U.S. government under his leadership. But I also think it's important for us to understand or to not lose sight of the fact that while this is much more visible under Donald Trump because of the way he approaches power and because of the way he wields the power of the U.S. government, that this is not an entirely novel thing, and that we have actually seen actions like this for quite a long time from U.S. presidents of both political stripes. So we can easily go back to previous administrations and see them using what are often termed free trade agreements in order to insert clauses within them that limit the ability of the countries that they were making those agreements with in order to regulate U.S. tech companies, right? In order to try to make sure that those tech companies operate according to the values, the expectations, the usual regulations that those countries would have, but that don't align with what the United States government and what those tech companies might want to do within those markets. And while, yes, it is, you know, another kind of Trump example, if we look back to the renegotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is now called the U.S.-Canada-Mexico Agreement, or, you know, in Canada and Mexico, it has slightly different names because, of course, you know, we can't just make it easy and have a single name for this trade agreement. But what we see there is that there are clauses within that agreement that make it difficult for Canada and Mexico to regulate the flows of data across borders and to bring in a whole range of regulations that would potentially constrain the types of things that U.S. tech companies and, you know, that any tech company really can do within their borders, right? The, you know, things that would maybe allow the Canadian government or the Mexican government to exert a bit more control over how those companies operate. But of course, things that those companies would not actually want to have to abide by, right? And so the U.S. government goes into these negotiations and makes sure that those sorts of things are put in the agreement, so it's much more difficult for governments that should be sovereign in their own territory to actually regulate these companies and try to address some of their more harmful impacts.
That was a highlight from the 300th episode of Tech Won't Save Us. Find it wherever you get your podcasts at techwontsave.us and at harbingermedianetwork.com. You're listening to Harbinger Showcase on your local campus and community radio station. I'm Harbinger director Andre Goulet in Montreal. And finally, broadcasting since 2014, Vancouver-based Seriously Wrong is a bi-weekly utopian leftist comedy podcast featuring co-hosts Aaron and Sean and guests in conversations exploring rent strikes, the justice system, airplane food, and more. Like on this excerpt from a recent episode where the Wrong Boys invite you to sit back and enjoy the debut edition of Papa and Boy Adventures Episode 1, as Papa Fatherson develops a new hit parenting system to overcome the historical tension between fathers and sons. Now, here's the show.
Papa and Boy, the series.
Oh, Papa, looks like it's time for bed.
Time for bed, boy.
Oh, yay, I'm excited to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
The time before bedtime is the best time because that's when you tell me about the world and how it works.
And it's my pleasure to teach you, Sonnet. To know that you want to go to bed right at bedtime without me mentioning anything, I am thrilled.
Yeah, the sooner we go to bed, the sooner we can have another great day together.
Oh, you're such a good son. Now, here, into bed now. You've got your nighttimey bib on. And
Will you tuck the blanket all the way up to my chin so all you can see is my head and not my neck?
Yeah, and here I'm tucking my son in.
It's warm and cozy.
That's right. Well, before we wrap up, do you want to do Q&A, dad-son stuff? Or
yeah, Papa, I was wondering, what's the difference between papas and boys?
That is a great question, boy, and you're old enough for me to talk frankly with you about this stuff. So the difference is a papa has a tobacco pipe like this.
Oh, yeah.
And a boy has a spinny cap like you wear. It's obviously on the bedside table as it's bedtime. And you got suspenders, big buttons on the front, often licking lollipops. Fathers, we sort of get together. We watch sports.
Lollipop.
We follow stocks, politics. We drink beer and we fish.
How come papas always know so much more than boys?
Well, papas and boys, they have a dynamic historical tension. It's been said that history so far has been a struggle between father and son.
Oh, wow.
The father demands stability, safety, honor, a realm of protection for the family. The boy longs to be free, wants to push up against boundaries and overthrow systems. The papa wants to preserve systems. The father says, let's be safe by being defensive, by being aggressive if needed. The boy strives for new frontiers and will often be a destabilizing force within the family.
But how come we don't have a whole lot of tension? We go together like peaches and cream, and I always want to do what you want me to do even before you ask me to do it. Our interests are aligned perfectly.
That's a great question, boy. That's a precocious little question. You and I get along so well because myself and some of my immediate colleagues have developed a world historical system, which we've been test driving on you, my son, to transcend and sublate the inherent philosophical and material tension between fathers and sons, the very engine of history. And from that tension, generate peace and harmony, papa and boy moving as one, like a double helix moving through time. Son, wow. I gotta say, the system works, and I've made my career on this. I'm actually getting an award tomorrow for excellence in fathering.
Well, congratulations. You deserve it, big guy.
Thank you, boy.
You earned it.
Look, we've been talking for so long, it is now your bedtime.
Oh, yeah, right. The part of bedtime I love is over.
I'll be turning off the light so you can grow up to become a doctor, like your mother and I are counting
on. To be a doctor.
Just like your grandfather.
Good night, Dad.
Have pleasant dreams, son. Welcome back to Papa. I'm your host, Papa, and today's guest, our very special guest today, folks, is Boy. Come on out, Boy.
Hey, everyone. Yeah. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you back on the show, Boy. I am proud of you. I'm so proud of you, son, that I'm pinning my hopes and dreams on your success. Don't let me down. Don't let your mother down.
Oh, no, Papa. I won't let anyone down. Papa, there was something I really wanted to
Before we get started on today's show, did you empty the dishwasher like I asked?
Did I empty the dishwasher? I was in makeup back there, you know, it took quite a while, and I was prepping my notes for the show, and I guess it must have slipped my mind.
So, boy, what you're saying is that you haven't done what you said you would do before you come on my daytime talk show.
Yeah, well, I was really thinking about the show, and I wanted to be good, and there's something I really wanted to talk to you about.
All right, everyone, we're just going to take a short break while my son does what he said he would. And in the meantime, we are going to be hearing from our sponsors. What will Papa and Boy do next? We'll be right back to answer that question.
Today's episode of Papa Boy Adventures is brought to you by the Seriously Wrong podcast. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our ad. My name is Aaron.
And my name's Sean.
And we try to do an ad like this in every dream that one of our characters has in an entire sketch episode about that character.
Seriously Wrong is a podcast that we think that both papas and boys alike can finally get along for once and listen to.
Yeah, and that's why we're launching the Papa Boy Adventure Series, starring sketch mainstays of the Seriously Wrong universe, the Papa on one hand and the Boy on the other.
Our pledge to you is that Papa Boy Adventures is number one, going to tug the heartstrings. Number two, keep you on the edge of your seat. And number three, teach us all a little something about this thing called life.
Just a quick reminder to everyone that Papa Boy Adventures is only made possible with your help. We are just like 200 patrons away from getting to a point where we can dedicate our lives to Seriously Wrong full time, and that'll mean a whole lot more Papa and Boy. So, oh, and it looks like Boy is back from washing the dishes, so we will throw it back to Papa, the show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Papa. That's Papa with an exclamation mark. It's a daytime show, and I host it here deep within the psychology of Boy. So welcome back to the show, Boy. It is great to see you and knowing that all your chores are done.
It does feel good to have my chores done. You were right, as usual. So the thing that I really wanted to talk to you about was I've been thinking that I could be a stand-up comedian one day.
Did you know that your grandfather was actually a doctor?
Yeah, he was a great man, Papa.
Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, when we had this conversation before, you said you'd probably be a doctor.
Yeah, it seemed like you really wanted me to say that.
That's my boy. That's my son. We never fight, folks. We always...
Papa and Boy getting along.
I'm proud to get along. Are you proud to get along, son?
I love getting along with you, Papa. It's the best thing in my life.
But yeah, stand-up comedy, it's on a decline, you know? Your mother and I are so proud that you've agreed to become a doctor.
Where are you driving me to, Papa? Where are we going?
Okay, I was going to keep it a surprise, but your mother and I paid your way through medical school, and we're driving you right there right now.
Papa.
So time to get started on a many-year journey.
I have a show tonight. I'm going to do an open mic. I'm on the list.
We are so proud that you have agreed to be a doctor.
No, Papa, I haven't even finished elementary school yet. I can't go out to medical school.
Here, let me just adjust your tie. I'm so proud of you. You're going to be married. Soon you won't need that propeller head anymore.
No, Papa, it's too soon. I can't go to school. I don't want to be a doctor.
And here's your beautiful bride.
A surgical table.
Now, your beautiful wife's surgical table needs you to drag her down the aisle.
But she's too heavy, Papa. I'm just a boy.
Your grandfather's watching you right now.
Okay, Grandpa, I'll do it, Grandpa. I'll become a doctor, Grandpa. Anything for you. What I want doesn't matter. I'm going to be the doctor that you all need me to be. What everybody wants, I just can do it. I can do it. I'm going to be a doctor. I can do it. I can do it.
Knock, knock, Boy. I heard you talking. You'll be a doctor?
What does that boy say? He'll be a doctor?
I heard him. He said, I will be a doctor.
Well, that's it. It's locked in.
Thank you so much, son, for agreeing to be a doctor. I'm so proud of you. Oh, would you look at the time? I need to have a shower, change, and then drive my car to the conference, where I will be receiving a parenting award.
Welcome back, everybody, to the 103rd annual J.E. Fathering Awards, named after the founder of Fathering, J.E. Fathering. It's such an honor to host the gala tonight, and everyone looks so good in the audience. The food looks so good. It's not often that I'm able to give this award to someone who, not just father of the year, but I would say father of the generation or father of the century. These techniques Papa Fatherson has developed have solved the historical tension between fathers and boys forever, infinitely into the future. You know, I don't want to overstate it, but it's a great honor to invite Papa Fatherson to the stage. Sir, you deserve it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. So here I am, Father of the Year. I'm really proud of what we've been able to do with Boy as a test case for the Fatherson system. It works. It works. We have a obedient, happy boy. The tension, the very engine of history, the inherent strife between father and boy has been calmed, directed. Don't take my word for it. Here's a brief word from my son, Boy.
And after this, you'll listen to me try my jokes?
Sure, sure, bud. But, we, you know, like we talked about.
Yeah, right. Okay. I love my papa and living with my papa. And I love how he always knows the best and right things for me to make me the happiest. And that's why I'm the happiest boy in the world.
That was a highlight from a new episode of Seriously Wrong. Find new episodes of the internationally acclaimed utopian leftist comedy show at seriouslywrong.com, at harbingermedianetwork.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. You've been listening to Harbinger Showcase. This episode has been brought to you by Unraked. Learn more about Canada's coalition of more than 30 progressive publishers and get all your independent Canadian journalism, including news, videos, and podcasts, in one place at unrigged.ca. Follow us on Blue Sky at harbingermedia.bsky.social and on Twitter at harbingertweets and on Instagram at mediaharbinger, and subscribe to the Harbinger newsletter for a weekly Wednesday roundup from Canada's cross-country community of 83 socially and politically progressive podcasts. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Until then, I'm Harbinger Director Andre Goulet in Montreal. Now, back to your regularly scheduled community radio station programming.
One thing I keep thinking about, too, as we're talking about this co-option and double meanings ascribed to things, like, so much of this, I don't know how to say this without sounding incredibly insulting to these folks, but like, how much of the fact that they borrow so much from other cultures and other, you know, creative outlets, other artists, other, you know, communities is a sign of their own sort of lack of culture. Because that was something that really struck me as I was reading through this book, is so much of what we see here is really only a culture of opposition to or co-option of. Is that a fair assessment, or do these guys really have any sort of unique culture that isn't firmly rooted in something else that they're co-opting?
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
Everyone should be treated equally, and the legal system should work for the people, not against them. Every day, our network of supporters, lawyers, and educators from across the country continue to fight against injustice and oppression, both in and outside of the courtroom and at all levels of government.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.